Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome to episode 189 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I'm Sean Penrod, your host. So happy you are joining us today for this amazing interview that we have lined up. If you're new to the show, the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast brings you two interviews a week with the best Magic players in the world and community icons so we can learn what it's like to prepare for events, get tips and tricks, kind of see where they came from. You know, every player has a story, every player has a history, every player came from somewhere, every player struggled with something when they first started with Magic, and I love bridging the gap between us and them, kind of see, hey, look, when they started out, they struggled with this just like I am, and if they overcame it and are now on the Pro Tour, I can do it too. So that's what we do here each and every week. Tuesday and Friday, you get an episode where we dive into the history of our guests, learn a little bit about them, and then get some tips and tricks that have helped them as they move their way on up and qualify for the Pro Tour. This episode is sponsored by the patrons and the Deck Building Masterclass. Patrons, thank you so much for supporting the show. It really means a lot to me. I love Patreon because it is a great way to connect with creators that you like. Over on the Patreon platform, you can pledge any amount you want per episode and then set a monthly limit so you never go over budget. And it doesn't matter what level you support at, you will be considered for our monthly drawing. Speaking of which, since we just wrapped up the month of March, here we are in April, I'm going to announce who won the patron exclusive giveaway for the month of March. So congratulations to Jane Ocean. Thank you so much for your support of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. It really means a lot to me. And I'll be sending an Aether Revolt bundle your way that has 10 booster packs from Aether Revolt. And it will undoubtedly be the last Aether Revolt bundle we send out, because next time we'll probably be moving on to Amonkhet. How cool is that? So thank you again so much. Really appreciate it. Congratulations, Jane Ocean, and getting that sent your way. As I mentioned, the other sponsor is the Deck Building Masterclass with co-hosts AJ Soccer, Michael Majors, and Matt Severa. It is a fantastic resource to help you improve your deck building skills. Do you think a good deck will carry you further in a tournament than a bad deck will? Of course it does. Obviously, piloting is part of it. You can give the best deck to a bad player and they will perform poorly. However, you can't refute that a good deck and good deck building fundamentals in the hands of a player who is striving and learning and really pushing for greatness will go a long way. That's what we do in the Deck Building Masterclass. Give you the tools you need to evaluate the meta and either tweak or build a new deck to really address what's going on and help you understand how to look at what's happening so you can be better positioned for your next event. The Deck Building Masterclass is all about helping you win more, so you can take down the game day, spike a PPTQ, or even top 8 a Grand Prix. So check out deckbuildingmasterclass.com if you haven't yet. You can get a free PDF emailed to you, which summarizes everything that we talked about with AJ, Michael, and Matt. And then if you want to dive real deep, you can get into the videos, which include 4 hours of these awesome, amazing players breaking down their process and really going in deep to their process of evaluating, determining, hypothesizing, and testing their ideas. It's awesome. And bundled with that, to sweeten the deal, I threw in my limited toolbox, which is a little mini course that I made with past guests of the show who contributed on topics including color selection, building a limited deck, and paying attention during a draft. So check that out. So that comes free with the videos. It's all bundled together if you go that route. So deckbuildingmasterclass.com to get the PDF. If you haven't yet, go check that out. Thank you so much to the patrons for supporting the show. And without further ado, let's bring in our great guest, sit down, and talk about Magic. What is up, everybody? I am super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest started playing Magic in Pharos. He got his first and only Grand Prix Top 8 in Charlotte 2015 and has chained Pro Tour invites ever since. He now has a Pro Tour Top 8 under his belt and is a gold level pro. Coming to us from Lafayette, Louisiana, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Donald Smith. Donald, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. That was a great intro.
Man, you're awesome. You're totally worthy of it. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Yeah, I'm super excited.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Donald, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He's at DonaldWSJR. DonaldWSJR. So you can reach out to him there. He's active on Twitter. You can say thanks for being on the show, ask him a question, but that is where you will find him. So, Donald, let's learn a little bit about you outside of Magic first. Are you born and raised in Lafayette?
No, I'm born and raised from a small town called Cut Off, Louisiana.
Cut Off?
Yeah, and I'm in Lafayette for college right now.
Excellent. What are you studying?
Math with a minor in education.
Excellent. Well, that is really cool. So math. So combat is pretty easy for you then. All those numbers are right up your alley.
Yep.
Awesome. So we love learning the origin stories of our guests. And we mentioned that you came in on Theros, but we would love for you to tell us the story of the very first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards.
Yeah, so I was a freshman living in the dorms. I didn't really have any friends because I'm moving to a new city, right? So I just talked to my roommate one day. I'm like, what are you doing tonight? He's like, we're going to play Magic. And I started playing. I got hooked. My cousin gave me like a small collection to build my own decks. And one time I got invited to a Wednesday night draft, and I just started going ever since.
Nice. So, oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So you came in college and you had never heard of Magic before then?
Maybe if you like showed me, I'd say that looks familiar, but I never like seen a card. No.
For sure. Wow, that's so cool. And you just, hey, what are you doing tonight? Oh, I'm going to go play Magic. And there you have it. So, you know, every hero has a humble beginning, and that's yours. That's totally cool. So what, you came in on Theros, like the beginning of Theros, Theros block, or like what was your, Theros was your first set?
Yeah, maybe like I technically started playing a week before, so I was really playing with like RTR cards, but yeah, my first draft was Theros.
Theros, cool. Now, what is your favorite set?
Like just for nostalgia reasons, I really do want to say Theros. I do think it was a cool set, and I had tons of fun playing it. For like competitive wise, I'd say Kaladesh. I've had like a lot of fun doing, and I've been very successful at. So split between those.
And along the same lines, what's one of your favorite cards?
I'd say my favorite card of all time is, I think, Chain to the Rocks, because like that's the card that taught me like the importance of like tempo, and then it's like so flavorful, and Boros is my favorite colors, so it just has everything I like.
Perfect. For those of us who don't know, what is that card, what does it do, and why do you like it?
Okay, so it costs a single white mana, so it's a one drop. You enchant a mountain you control, and then you basically like fiend hunter a creature. So it's one mana removal. It's kind of dual colored in a sense, in that you need a mountain, but it costs white mana. And yeah, as I said, it's super tempo efficient. I think it's like secretly modern playable, and the flavor of it's so good if you like read into the Greek mythology and whatnot.
Yes, so true. Yeah, because I mean, the picture is literally somebody changing the rocks, and there is that Greek mythological story. I forget which hero, but he's literally, you know, chained to rocks. And so, yeah, you're right. The flavor win and cheat removal, but it's kind of like almost pseudo two colors. Like you said, in modern, I guess you could play a Sacred Foundry and then play it on turn one, but I mean, there probably won't be too many targets for it anyway, so it's not that bad. So that's awesome. Way cool. That's really neat. So I love that. Definitely a first here on MTG Pro Tutor. So that's awesome. We always love hearing, you know, new favorite cards. That's great. So what makes Magic fun for you? So you mentioned you started, you know, in college, and but here you are still playing, even though you are in college, you have other things going on in your life. So why? Why do you carve out the time to play Magic?
So I've always played like a lot of video games and stuff, but you know, I switch between them, but then I got hooked on Magic because of the social aspect. So every game has a strategy component and different things like that. That's not unique to Magic, but there's no other game where you could go like physically play against people, and it's a really unique social experience that I think no other like competitive like game has really.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's so true. So true. When you started getting serious about, you know, Magic, what was an aspect that you were terrible at, but that you eventually overcame?
Man, everything, because I got into it so quickly. But like, I think just in general, like preparing for a tournament, it's like I played some pretty bad constructed decks, brought to some Pro Tours. I brought some pretty bad constructed decks to some Grand Prix. So just the whole like preparation of it. But I think I finally got it down. Like it literally took till the last Pro Tour to really feel confident in my process. Because even in Pro Tour Kaladesh, I brought a green-red Pummeler, and that was just like not a good deck at all. So it's I'd say preparation. Just like identifying, you know, like what's the best deck? Like what's the strongest cards? Not trying to be too cute. Not trying to do my own thing. And just saying sometimes I need to copy the best deck and roll with it. Sometimes I get something like my own idea and run with it, but it's a wild ride preparing for a tournament.
Yeah. Yeah, and we would definitely love to dive into that in more detail. So now, as you prepare for events, what does that look like? How far out do you pick your deck? How do you pick your deck? Let's just walk through that process together.
Okay, so for Constructed specifically, what I started doing is I call it like open source. I don't try to hide anything anymore. I don't try to be secretive. Like for the last Pro Tour, if you were qualified, you messaged me and we started a Facebook group. And so I felt like I worked with 50 different people. And as far as picking a deck, I don't think it's best to lock in too early. I would say maybe have like 3 to 2 decks that you're like actively playing and working with. And then you could narrow down maybe 5 days before. And it also helps because even if you favor a deck, like I favor Mardu heavily, but I was always playing with black green and like Saheeli decks just because I could know how to play against them when I am playing my Mardu deck. But then if something just happens, like some sideboard tech or something comes out that makes Mardu unplayable, I don't feel devastated, and I won't be happy to make the switch, but it's better than bringing green red pummeler type of deck to a Pro Tour, which is just unplayable.
Interesting. Very interesting. All right. Now, when would you say you had your breakthrough as a Magic player?
Yeah, I feel like every like tournament I've been to has been a breakthrough. So
good.
The first Pro Tour was a breakthrough because it qualified me to the next. It was a huge finish. But I still felt like I was like, maybe I just got lucky, you know. So I wasn't completely sure. And then I had 2 bad Pro Tours, but then I went to Kaladesh. I'm like, I wasn't actually even going to go initially, but someone decided to sponsor me on a whim.
Oh, nice. That's
and
cool.
Then I had the same top 25 finish, and that was another breakthrough because I was going to like kind of ride out silver, see what happens. But now I'm like, okay, well, I could definitely get silver again. Now I'm going to Dublin. And then, of course, the top 4 is an insane breakthrough because it got me gold and everything that comes with that. I feel confident I'll get platinum this year also.
So. Excellent. Oh, that is so exciting. Now, in the intro, we mentioned that you have 1 Grand Prix top 8, and then, you know, you've just been chaining it together the Pro Tour since then. How? Like, is it just based on your good finishes at the Pro Tour that you've been able to go from Pro Tour to Pro Tour?
Yeah, even getting a top 25 finish is huge. It gives you 10 points. And so what happened like last season was I got 10 points. Then I got 3 points just for showing up to the next one. I top 4'd an RPTQ. That's 16 points. X4'd a Grand Prix. Okay, now I'm silver. So then I go to the Kaladesh and 10 points. Then 23 points for that top 4. X4 at a Grand Prix. And now I'm gold.
Excellent. Wow. So that's incredible. It just shows that you don't have to always be spiking Grand Prix. I mean, you have to be doing consistently well. Like you just mentioned, RPTQ, Grand Prix, Pro Tour. So you have to be doing well at, you know, top competitive level events. But it doesn't always have to just be based on Grand Prix finishes. So that's really, really cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
So when you think about your growth in Magic, who has taught you? Who are some of your Magic mentors?
Okay, so I would say basically the person who taught me to draft, he's a local guy, Derek. He taught me the game, and he looks at things very analytically. So it was just, that's kind of what jump started from first starting to like being pretty competitive a few months in. He just fed me everything, and especially about limited, which I think is the best way to learn how to play. And then in terms of like pro players, I'd say like Owen Turnwald's a pretty big influence because like just for how much he like practices and how much work he puts into it, that's kind of like the angle I operate at. I don't think I'm particularly talented, but like I think I have a insane work ethic, and that's kind of how I view Owen. So that'd be like the number one mentor on top of my head. Yeah,
great. So your friend Derek and Owen Turnwell, that's awesome. So your journey through magic has had ups and downs, just like everybody else. But your ups and downs are unique, and we would love to dive into your worst magic moment and what you learned from that experience.
Okay, so I kind of have two. I have a specific tournament, and then I have a period. So I think between Pro Tour Atlanta last year all the way through, like, up to Pro Tour Honolulu, I didn't really have any results. I, like, went to two Pro Tours, but, I mean, I could have basically showed up and dropped, and that's it. You know, I didn't win anything, not even points. I got that RPTQ top four, but then I went to two RPTQs and, like, bombed out of them. I went to some Grand Prix, nothing to show for it. So it was really just like a period where I was questioning whether I was a one-hit wonder or not. But Kaladesh came around and kind of dispelled all that, luckily. But then, like, even December, like, last December was really weird because I went to Grand Prix Milwaukee and I felt I prepared a lot. And I got to day two at X and two. And then I just bombed the draft. I went 1-4 and dropped. And this is after coming off from a 6-0 from the previous Pro Tour in the same format. So it kind of humbled myself because at first I'm like, oh, I'm a 6-0 the Pro Tour. I don't have to practice as hard. And then I just get stomped. So it gave me humility, I guess, and realized you have to keep practicing no matter what previous tournaments you did well at.
That is really interesting. What do you think the format just kind of developed and moved on past you, and because you weren't practicing, you didn't catch it, and so you were drafting stuff that was good back in the day, and then your draft then was just out of date?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Especially like Kaladesh, people realized it was like an insanely fast format. But at the Pro Tour, you could get away with a lot of things because no one quite has it figured out, so the aggressive decks aren't as aggressive, and the grindy decks aren't as grindy. So it's just two completely, I don't want to say like different formats, but like two different like metagames within a limited format. So basically you could draft these like five drops in at the Pro Tour. But man, when you got to Milwaukee, like everyone was curving 2, 3, 4, and then just have every combat trick in the book.
Wow, and that's a very interesting story. Like, I love that you were able to share that with us, especially the part about just learning, you know, humility and going, hey, like, you have to keep sharp, you have to keep practicing. What did you do during that period to keep going, keep your spirits up? Because, like you said, like, you had great finishes, you're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna keep on going, this magic thing's awesome, and then you went through this period of not great finishes, and now here you are back up doing great, and we're very happy, and we're excited to see you go on. But during that time, what kept you going? You know, like, any tips that you can share with the listeners who may, you know, be going through a similar slump?
I mean, it's just all about persistence. So, like, you know, I got bit hard. I was like, all right, didn't practice as much. So, I mean, it was as simple as next tournament, it ignited a fire. I wanted to prove myself. So I just doubled down on my efforts and actually got rewarded because I went to Grand Prix Louisville a few weeks after and got a cash and a X4. Which was very important. That's what's like locking me up gold right now. It's just all about persistence. Cause like people say, man, you've had an insane year. I'm like, yeah, I agree. But like every good Pro Tour finish I've had like two Grand Prix where I just have nothing to show for it. Like I went to Vancouver a few weeks ago. I went 1-4, didn't even day two. And this is after three buys. Like, how embarrassing is that? But because of that Milwaukee experience, I kept my head up. It doesn't even faze me, really. And I've had a great time in Vancouver, and I'm just ready to go to New Jersey next week.
Yeah, okay.
Just excited.
That is very, very interesting, you know. And yeah, and it shows that those people who are good at magic, like, it's not like a sure thing. Like you said, you have to keep practicing. You have to keep up your skills because you can come to an event. And like you said, for every Pro Tour or every good Pro Tour you have, there's two Grand Prix that are not so good. And it's not the most consistent thing, but you can be consistent as you, you know, practice and as you go to events, realizing that while the results may not be as consistent as your efforts, you can control your efforts. And that is what matters, is keeping with it, staying consistent, and just keep showing up.
Exactly.
Man, that's awesome. Now, the flip side, obviously, are our highs. And so what is your proudest magic moment to date?
Okay, so I don't want to just say the top four. It has been my proudest Magic moments, but like that's obvious, right? Okay, top four to Pro Tour. That's insane. But like besides that, I do think like a very personal like thing was locking up my 11th win to qualify for Dublin at Honolulu. So it was only, we still had one round left to go. So I was playing for top 16, which would have been really big, but I was so happy that I qualified for Dublin because I would have never used my silver invite on that. It wasn't feasible. And it was like, that was the one moment when I got that 11th win where I was like, okay, I'm not a one hit wonder. Like, my first Pro Tour wasn't a fluke, and I was so happy. I immediately called my mom. I'm like, you know, it's the middle of the tournament. I still have one round to go. And I was just calling my mom, like, Mom, I'm going to Ireland next year. Like, this is crazy. She's like, are they paying for your flight? Because, like, that's what she was worried about. I'm like, yep, they are. And, yeah, so that was, like, a really great moment for me. The top four was insane, of course, but that goes without saying.
Wow, that is so neat. So that 11th win that, you know, got you the Pro Tour Dublin invite, that, man, I can just hear it in your voice, and I can just see, you know, you on the phone talking to your mom and sharing that great news, and that's awesome. That is a special moment. That's really cool. And then you put it to good use by making it to the top four.
Yeah. Yeah, that was insane. I couldn't believe it. Like, I knew I was double drawing in to the top eight, and, like, I was still so nervous because I just had to get that second draw before I really could realize what happened.
Interesting. Now, how did you prepare for Pro Tour Dublin? Are you on a team?
So not like strictly. I'm on that team Lingering Souls. But so as I said before, we do that open source testing, right? So if even to whoever's listening, if you're going to the next Pro Tour, from RPTQ, I don't care how you qualify, like, message me on Twitter or whatever, and I want as many people as possible. And so the idea behind this, like, method is me and, like, my Lingering Souls crew, we're not as good as the Pantheon, Channel Fireball, Ice, and all those. So we're not going to try to replicate their process because we know we're just not going to be up to par. So we just need more, as many ideas as possible, and it's just a huge think tank, and we churn through so much information, and even though we're not as good as, you know, these Hall of Famers, I felt when we went to the Pro Tour, we were on the same level. Half of us were on Mardu, which was by far the best deck. The other half was on Saheeli, which was like a reasonable choice. Actually, one of our guys actually was like the best Saheeli performer in the tournament. So yeah, it's like, we don't have the quality, but I mean, we're all on the Pro Tour, so it's not like we're bad.
Exactly.
So if we could just get a ton of people, we could eventually reach the same conclusions as other pro teams. And it's the same concept for Limited.
Love it. That's awesome. Well, once again, Prodigies, if you are in the sound of our voice right now, open invitation. If you are qualified for the Pro Tour, reach out to Donald. He is on Twitter at DonaldWSJR. And yeah, hit him up and then you can, you know, join forces. And this is a topic that has come up several times on the show. We've interviewed, you know, many people who made their first Grand Prix top eight or whatever. And it's very interesting to hear, hey, like, what are you going to do? Like, how are you going to prepare? And, you know, what's your plan? And a lot of them just like, I don't know, I'll just group up with people who in my area who are going or whatever. And some people don't have people in their area. So this is great. It's great that you're putting this together and that, you know, you're reaching out, and, that's awesome. That is really cool. Cause I'm, you know, always very interested to hear how that is going. So awesome. Now, as you have played Magic, have you sat across the table from, you know, hundreds of different people and just seen and absorbed so much information? What is the biggest mistake that you see players make, and how can we avoid that mistake?
I would say a lot of times people at all levels, they play too scared. So this was especially relevant for this Pro Tour when Saheeli was such a big deck. So if they go turn three Saheeli, you can't hold up removal. You're just not going to win. So yeah, every time they would go Saheeli, you just have to follow up with your biggest threat. You just slam Gideon. And yeah, sometimes you die, but a lot of times you win. and that's every format, like limited, everything. I think people just have to like, it's the simple, and so many other pros and everyone says it, you have to play to win, not play to not lose. Exactly. And no matter, it's so cliche and everything, but it, people still fall into that trap of playing way too afraid. On that, it was actually funny. I was listening to, I think, Limited Resources with LSV or something, some interview, and he literally just said, he's like, most of the times I don't even play around anything. And so that's like, that really hit home and like reinforced that when I heard that quote, like, I just don't play around anything most of the time.
Nice. Very, very interesting. I love that. Definitely love that. What is something about Magic that you've learned or that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
I almost want to say that same lesson because if I didn't take risk, if I didn't fly to Las Vegas for my first Grand Prix to like ignite my spark, as I call it, for competition, if I didn't say like, yeah, whatever, I'll do a 14-hour car ride to Grand Prix Charlotte. If I didn't take these risks, if I was playing it safe, saving money, and you know, just sitting on my computer playing Moto or whatever video game that isn't flying me to Japan this summer, I wouldn't be where I am. So it's like you gotta take risk in life within a reason, also in a sense. And then like I guess another thing is just being super analytical about everything. It's helped me with my math courses, especially like proofs, which are pretty difficult. So I feel like I'm a little ahead of the curve on that too.
Awesome, that's so cool. I love it. I love hearing what areas of life are impacted by Magic. So that's really cool. Now, turning the lens inward on you, what have you learned about yourself? What's the deepest thing you've learned about yourself from playing Magic?
I think that my work ethic, I fully realized that because my first few years of college was actually pretty difficult because I was in engineering at the time and it really wasn't the major for me. So I was slogging through these classes that I didn't enjoy and like, they were really miserable. So in turn, I would stop studying and stuff. And after I failed my like first class, I thought like, man, am I like not cut out for college? And I knew it wasn't because I was stupid. I knew for a fact it's like I wasn't studying enough, but I also couldn't bring myself to study because like I wasn't enjoying it. But then when I started performing in Magic, I'm like, okay, I could put effort into something. I could succeed in something. I just have to find what it is. And that's what made me switch majors. And now I'm doing pretty well in my math major. And so, yeah, that was like it was a bad moment after I failed my first class, after being like, quote unquote, good student. But it, like these tournament results and everything made me realize that like, I can do something if I just put the work into it.
Love it. Wow. That's awesome. That's powerful right there. And I think that's great. Now, back in the Magic realm, as a Magic player, what are some of your shortcomings? What are you working on as a player to get better?
Yeah, so there's a lot. Because I'm so new, like every aspect of my game can be improved. And I recognize that. So, but I think my biggest weakness right now is I think my deck range is pretty narrow. And it's a really awkward spot for me because I'm so new to the game that I just haven't had enough time to play. So, I stick to aggro decks and I typically avoid control and like big mid-range decks. At first, when you're starting, that's fine because you don't have enough time to play everything. But now it's awkward because I don't have the experience, but everything is so high stakes now. So I'm trying to work on that to expand my range because I don't want to be, even if it works right now, 2 years from now, I don't want to find the best deck, be control, but then just not be good at it. And it came up at Aether Revolt, the last Pro Tour. I literally just said, okay, I can't play Saheeli combo. It's just not in my range. I'm not going to beat Hall of Famers on the same strategy. So I turned toward a different one. But if Mardu didn't work out and Saheeli would have been the best deck, I mean, I wouldn't be doing this podcast with you right now. So that's something I'm working on. I'm trying to expand my range, and I have been working on it, but it's really difficult.
How do you work on it? How do you expand your range? What can you share with those who want to do something similar?
I mean, you just gotta do it. You have to identify when you're playing for like relatively low stakes and deliberately go outside your range, even if you know it won't give you your best chance. So I actually started working on it right after Kaladesh. There was a Modern Grand Prix and then just a lot of free time in December. So I went to Grand Prix Dallas, which was Modern, and I forced control. Even though many people will tell you control is really bad in Modern, I forced it. I played this. I thought it was a pretty cool deck, but I only got an X5 finish because I knew the deck wasn't the best, but it was still valuable to me because I went outside my comfort zone, because normally I'm used to playing fast rounds, so I could be very deliberate on my decisions, but this forced me to like kind of speed up my pace of play. Not that I think I'm a slow player, but like it was something I never had to be conscious about when I'm just playing these turn four aggro decks. And then in that moment in December where there wasn't many tournaments, I got on Magic Online. I bought four Torrential Gearhulks, and I just tried every different configuration of that. There was no tournaments, no nothing. It's just, I was like, okay, let me get better control. Like, let me use this month as like a development period. And it worked out decently well. I'm still not confident with it yet.
Yeah, but like you said, you got to get out there and do it. You got to play, you know, so choose a deck that you're not good at. And at the very least, you know, play against a friend, you know, like just keep playing that. Take it to, again, identify low stake things, right? So whether that's FNM for you, you know, obviously if you're trying to make a run at a PPTQ, don't take something new, unless that's your low stake event, right? But yeah, so just play with friends, play online, you know, play at FNMs, like, you know, push yourself to play these other decks. I would also recommend finding someone who is good at that style and talking to them, you know, have them, you know, coach you along, or have them play against you and then point things out, or whatever happens to be, but, find a mentor, find someone who is good at that specific archetype and have them guide you through it, so that down the road, when you are at a high stakes event and the best deck is X, Y, or Z, then you know exactly what, you know, then you're comfortable at least piloting, you know, whatever style happens to be good. So yeah, I love that. That's a good process to go through for sure. What would you say is your best format?
I'd say limited. Yeah, I'd just say limited. Like, limited is what has been carrying me. So even though I went 5-5 with Green Red Pummeler, I went 6-0 in draft and qualified for Dublin, and just every pro tour I would do basically 4-2s, which is a great record. I was talking to some people. I'm like, if I could go 4-2 every pro tour in the draft portion, like that, I'd be set for life. So that's what has been carrying me. One of my Grand Prix caches, which I really do not have a lot of, was in limited. It's interesting that my top eight in my Grand Prix top eight was in Modern, which is like by far my worst format, but I think I just had a really good read of the metagame at that time.
How did you do that? Like, how did you read the meta and show it with the right deck on that particular event?
That was a unique point. That was, that Grand Prix was right after Dragons of Tarkir came out, and when Kolaghan's Command was the new thing. So I was playing Affinity a lot online, and every game I would just get Kolaghan's Command, Snapcaster, Kolaghan's Command. And I'm like, okay, this is unplayable. But then I noticed, I'm like, all right, everyone's Grixis or Jund, and those colors typically don't have life gain or don't have effective life gain. Basically, it's an absence of white. So I brought Burn to the Grand Prix and top aided that. It was because I recognized Burn's weakest color is like white. The color white is brutal against it, and no one's playing white. So I just rolled through all these like Grixis decks and stuff, and they had zero sideboard, and it was a pretty easy tournament. But I do not recommend Burn anymore with Collective Brutality.
No, of course not. But that process is really awesome. So, you know, you had this, you know, this new set came out, which introduced a very functional card to Modern, your Kolaghan's Command. So everyone's using this, and they're all, you know, playing with the new hotness. And so you said, okay, that if they're playing all this stuff, they're not playing white. So that means that this strategy is going to be good against that. So that's the kind of process you need to be going through, is like, okay, what's everyone playing right now? Like, what is absent or what is dominant? And just kind of figure out, you know, what's going on. And then, you know, pick a deck based on, you know, obviously a tier deck, like an archetype that actually will do well. I mean, unless you're like super good at coming up with your own thing. But pick something that's going to, you know, is going to do well, or that has a proven track record, and then take it as long as it's going to do well against, you know, the exploit that you found or something. That's awesome. I love that process, going through that. It just takes, you know, it just takes experience, you know, playing many matches and observing what's going on, and then takes time to think and to theory craft and to really go through, you know, that process. So that's awesome. I love that you broke that down. That's really, really interesting. I think that's awesome. So back to Limited. So here we are at Limited. We always love asking what, you know, the best format is, and then some advice as far as, you know, within that realm of expertise. So obviously there's going to be a gap between when this recorded, when this goes live. So it might be a little bit different, but maybe not specific limited advice. If you have more general limited advice, that's fine. But do you have any limited advice you can share with us, either, you know, for where we are right now with Aether Revolt, or just something that you've really noticed has served you well as a limited player?
Yeah, I have a few things. For Aether Revolt specifically, I think it's very useful to like try to lock in your colors into pack one, not like super early, but really carefully read the table in pack one, because Kaladesh is like just a stronger pack. So if you read the signals in pack one, when you get to pack three, you'll pick up a lot of good cards. So for example, I actually did like a really interesting draft the other day where I first picked like a white card or something, and then I started picking black, and I noticed black and green were open, but I didn't pick any green cards just because like the black was always a little bit better. But I knew I put the person on my left in green, but I knew I'd still be in green because when Kaladesh came around, I would just get the amazing green cards, especially in Kaladesh. Green is so good with Pima Outriding and Thriving Rhinos. So that's specific formats. In terms of general limit advice, I'd say I think a big trap people fall into is letting color biases over influence what they do. So Arilax, I think it was Arilax, he said, it was the perfect quote. He said, "Battle for Zendikar made everyone bad at drafting, because in Battle for Zendikar, green was actually unplayable." So that was a correct bias to avoid green. But it hasn't been true. That hasn't been true for any color since. And I haven't been drafting that long, but it hasn't been true before in most cases. So people right now are saying white's the worst color, but I'll still first pick Thopter Arrest over almost like any non-rare and not bomb card. It's just the white isn't that bad. The worst colors aren't that bad. And especially when it gets parroted over and over, then people stop drafting that color. So then it's funny how I've seen like a Dawnfeather Eagle, which is an amazing 5-drop that's white. It wheeled one time. I was like, that was insane to me. So yeah, just don't buy into the hyperbole about like color rankings. Personally, I don't even rank colors. People say, "Oh, what are the best colors?" I'm like, okay, well, like these two colors are bottom tier, and these like three colors are top tier. But as a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, don't ask me that. I don't know. It doesn't affect me. Also, general limit advice: just draft more. I think way too many people don't draft enough. But I think if you're not a good limited player, you're just not going to be a good player in general. Not like you're not going to be bad, but switching to form from standard to modern, and then like I had to play Legacy for the first time in January, and rotations and meta shifts, I wouldn't be able to adapt to that if I didn't play limited. Limited teaches you how to adapt, and I think more people just need to play limited. Everyone needs to play more limited. Like, do a draft a week minimum, and if you could do more, do more.
That's awesome. What is an underplayed card or undervalued card in limited right now?
I don't want to say every white card.
That's awesome. So,
yeah, I can't think of a specific, but yeah, every white card is undervalued.
And I really appreciate your the advice to play at least once a week. That's an awesome goal. You know, you can draft at least once a week, whether it's, you know, in real life or online or something like that. That's, you're going to put yourself ahead of so many other players who don't take that time. Obviously, you can go more, and there's players who draft way more than that every week. But, you know, you got to start somewhere. And if that's where you're at, then that's a great place to start. Because, like you said, it gets you, one, it gets you familiar with cards. And then it also helps you, you know, adjust and develops, you know, certain muscles, or not muscles, but like muscle memory, I guess, as far as getting used to, you know, things changing and lack of resources and just the how quickly things shift and whatnot. And so you're able to apply those skills in other formats as well. So I love that breakdown. I love the specific Ether Revolt advice and then the general drafting advice as well. I think that's really, really good. When you're traveling, what do you take with you? What's in your tournament bag, Donald?
All right. So I actually make it a point to bring life pads, dice, pins, and a play mat, just because it tilts me a little bit when like a pro player is like, oh, could I borrow a life pad sheet or something? I think that's ridiculous. So, I try to be normal and bring things I need to play the game with. Other than that, I always have my laptop just so, you know, just for like personal reasons and whatnot. Then I always bring, I think it's very important to have like snacks, but not like Doritos or something, but I always bring either Nature's Valley bars, granola bars, or like Clif bars. And I think that's a lot of people don't consider, also bring a water bottle. A lot of people don't consider hydration and like nourishment during a tournament. And they'll go get that greasy, overpriced, crappy convention center food, or they'll just starve. It's alarming how many times I'm in the last two rounds of day one at a Grand Prix and my opponents are sloppy, making misplays, and you know, I'm chatty before and during sideboarding, and they'll just complain about how hungry they are. Well, I'm like, that's your fault. Yeah, I don't know what else to say.
I
just always try to bring just Clif bars is like my thing.
Love it. And I'm with you, man. I love taking what I need to play, you know, the game. Like the life pad, the dice, the pens. I make sure I have the appropriate tokens for my deck, if any, you know.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah, that too. That's a big one.
Totally. Yeah, I'm with you there. I totally, totally, totally agree. And then snacks and water, man. Yeah, so you are fully loaded and stocked and ready to go. And that's a big thing for me, too, is making sure that you have the right snacks and stuff. So, yeah, definitely, definitely we're on the same page there. Now, do you have any daily rituals or habits or anything that you do on a consistent basis that you feel helps you get better at Magic?
I can't think of anything specific. I mean, I just always make sure I try to play, like, just a little bit at least once a day. But that's not really a ritual. That's just playing a lot. As for like a daily ritual, no, I can't think of anything.
Well, that's good. No, so playing daily, I mean, that's definitely, that's my takeaway there. You know, some way, shape, or form, you're playing Magic every day, and that keeps you in it, keeps your mindset on it, and keeps you sharp. And so, yeah, you might not be doing like a full-on, you know, five-round tournament every single day or whatever, but by playing a little bit every day, you know, you're, yeah, keeping the wheels greased. So I think that's great.
Even if it's like a cube, I think like cubes and like battle boxes and little silly formats like really keep your muscles going. I think cubes kind of like an underrated, like not practice tool, but like it's a really good way to like keep you up on fringe interactions and stuff that people don't utilize.
And we talked about it a little bit a while ago, but what events you have coming up? So where are you going to be in the future?
Everywhere. So I'm going to New Jersey. And then I'll be going to San Antonio or Orlando, whichever is first, then the other one after, then going to Mexico City. And then after that, I think it's nothing until Nashville. So I think I have maybe a month or two break to kind of finish up finals and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But that's good. That timeline works out pretty well for you.
Yeah.
Now, Prodigy's out there, quick reminder, if you want to connect with Donald, you can do so on Twitter at DonaldWSJR. So look him up there, say thanks for being on the show, and let him know how much you appreciated this episode. Now, Donald, what is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said you want to emphasize or something new you want to leave with us here at the end.
I think I really, really want to reiterate drafting every day. So many people ignore drafting, and it's just so wrong to do that. And especially, I think that's actually part of the reason why, I got so good and so competitive so quickly, because my first tournament was a draft. And in college, I'm like, well, that was fun. So I just did it every week for almost a year, probably. I rarely missed a draft, a Wednesday night draft. It just didn't happen. And I really think that's a key to my success, was that I was so into drafting, and it let me learn so many things so quickly. I never played Legacy before December, and I cashed that tournament. And if I didn't know just fundamental combat things with my Death and Taxes deck, I would have been so lost, I felt.
Well, Donald, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. And thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it has been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thanks.
There you have it, Mr. Donald Smith. Thank you so much. As always, you know you can get the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/Donald Smith. And while we're talking about the website, I appreciate everyone's patience. If you've tried to go to the website in the past couple days and it's been finicky or down, it's because I've been battling with some back-end stuff again. It's ridiculous. We've had to reinstall the site, which I thought I wouldn't have to do because I implemented some security measures after this happened, last month, it feels like. So we'll have to ramp up the security and make sure it doesn't happen again. So thank you for your patience. If you've been to the site recently and it's been crazy, that's why. So should be up now. And you can get today's episode at mtgpro2.com/Donald Smith, where we'll link to any resources that were mentioned. And a final shout out to the sponsors of this episode, the patrons. You are the best. Congrats to Jane Ocean again. I'll be reaching out to send you a Aether Revolt bundle and the Deck Building Masterclass at deckbuildingmasterclass.com, where you can strengthen your fundamentals and enhance your deck building skills by evaluating, determining, hypothesizing, and testing your hypothesis to make better decks and address the meta. Our co-hosts do an amazing job at deep diving into these topics, so check out deckbuildingmasterclass.com. Thank you so much. Hope you have a fantastic weekend lined up. We have a Grand Prix, of course, that I can't wait to see the results for. So if you're not attending that, get out there and play some Magic, either FNM, chum with some buddies, whatever it happens to be. So take care. Stay tuned. I'm Sean of the Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.